Hello everyone and welcome to Geekoscopy 101, the podcast that explores the intersection between science, story and play with me, your host Dr. Yannis Kisten. And today we are exploring ecofiction storytelling with author and film editor Aleksandar Nedeljković. Welcome to the show, Alex. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Really excited to speak to you. The third ecofiction author that I've had on this show, people working in the background to try and increase the awareness about ecofiction, environmental awareness, climate change and stuff like that. So really important work. So tell us a bit about yourself, Alex, and what you do.
I'm a film editor by trade, a filmmaker, storyteller. Alt is my first published book. I'm based in New York, where I've been living for the last almost 30 years of my life. I was born in Serbia, a part of former Yugoslavia. I had a very happy, carefree childhood, but Balkans, being Balkans, a place where all bad geopolitical ideas get tested first. The Civil War broke out. I was lucky enough not to directly be part of it. I moved to New York in 1993. It was a good place back then. I mean, it still is. I'm still here. But the bohemian spirit and overall can-do energy of the 90s New York City was something pretty special, and I feel grateful that I landed here at that time. This is where I learned my craft, working for European and American TV networks and being a part of the New York independent film scene. For the last few years, I've been working on a project with a Canadian filmmaker, Gregory Colbert. It's a continuation of his previous project, Ashes and Snow, which was a feature-length poetic narrative film that celebrates the nature and explores the shared sensibilities of animals and humans in a visually very stunning way. There's also a photography and musical component to it. It's a long project. We've been at it for quite a while.
So how did you become aware of environmental concerns, climate concerns, and started creating media for those type of things?
At one point in my career, I was editing a lot of documentaries. I even produced and directed a couple of documentaries myself. After I finished my second documentary, I wanted to do another one on alternative energy and peak oil, which is a theory originally introduced by American geophysicist M. King Hubbard that basically says that for any given geographical area, the rate of petroleum production tends to follow a bell-shaped curve. There's a peak, and from there on, the production starts falling off until those deposits are completely depleted. Hubbard correctly predicted that the US oil production would peak in the 1970s. But his models only included data that relates to the conventional method of oil extraction. Now, with the introduction of new technologies like fracking and oil sands extraction methods, that bell curve got stretched out a bit and the global oil production peak got delayed a few decades. But it's coming. There's no doubt about that. For the simple fact that these resources are finite, sooner or later, we will run out of oil. There's no doubt about that. The question that kind of scared me when I was contemplating all this was, what then? What happens when we run out of oil? Because whether we like it to admit it to ourselves or not, we are so completely and hopelessly dependent on fossil fuels. Our entire civilizational model is built around it. Fossil fuels provide about 80% of world's energy, 80%. And that's only the energy generation part of it. Our food supply chain is also heavily dependent on fertilizers, which are for the most part made from fossil fuels. There are almost 8 billion people that we need to feed every day, and almost every bite we take has a bit of oil in it. Add to that, millions upon millions of products that in one way or another exist only because of readily available fossil fuels. One can make an argument that everything we've built, in the last 150 years or so we owe to oil. I don't think this is much of an exaggeration. Fossil fuels, primarily oil, are the heart and blood of our existence. A difference between light and darkness, prosperity and hunger, life and death. Without oil, the entire engine of progress grinds to a halt, and the economic, political, and cultural consequences of that are unimaginable. Huh, but it gets worse, right? Climate change. Of course, now we know that our use of fossil fuels is the main contributor to global warming, which degrades the conditions of our very existence here on Earth. So we're stuck in this vicious circle. We desperately need fossil fuels to maintain our way of life and the trajectory of progress we're on, but at the same time, we are destroying our habitat in all kinds of horrendous ways. These are gravely serious issues that, for whatever reason, we, the collective we, fail to take as seriously as they need to be taken. We have to move the world to action and find our way out of this unsustainable and very dangerous model of living. It's an incredible challenge that we have to face sooner or later, because the consequences of inaction are going to be very, very high.
It's a problem that I think most people are aware of by now. I think it's not even an awareness problem. I think it's more of a will problem, like a political will and a will
right. Yeah.
Civilization that is actually the problem right now. So it is good that people like you are working on that. So your latest project is actually a book called Alt. So why don't you tell us a bit about that? How did that come about?
Alt is a novel set in the near future in what's now the United States. I guess it could be classified as an eco-fiction, speculative fiction, hard science fiction, cli-fi, or even a techno-thriller. It has elements of all those genres. The world of Alt is similar to our world, but obviously different. I think a good comparison would be, let's say, 1992. Which fundamentally doesn't feel that much different than 2022, but obviously in so many ways it's very, very different. So it's a few decades from the present day. That near future world is at the same time shabbier and more exquisite version of today's world, depending on what side of tracks you live in. If the economic and political trends of today continue unimpeded, chances are that we are going to end up in a world where difference between haves and have-nots is going to be even greater, to the point that these two groups might not even directly interact with one another anymore. The globe is rocked by an energy crisis caused by perpetual oil shortages, and the world is scrambling to find alternative sources of energy in time to fend off rapidly approaching civilizational collapse. We're in Concord, a small town in the Bay Area in California, which is now an independent country following the dissolution of the United States, in the home of Theo Smith, a computer scientist who is trying to recreate his father's long-lost invention. His father, Augustus Smith, was a pioneer in alternative energy sector who lived in our times. He invented CORUS, a new generation solar panel that captures the sun's energy through chlorophyll and resonance energy transfer, a process known as artificial photosynthesis. However, a month after Augustus presented his findings, his laboratory burned to the ground and he died under suspicious circumstances. Now, a group of scientists is working with the Atlantic Commonwealth, which is a loose union of some of the Eastern American states, to develop Sundance, a solar energy collection and delivery system that promises to solve two of the biggest challenges faced by civilization, the global energy crisis and climate disruption. But in order for the project to work out, they need to recover the original design of CORUS that Augustus devised, and they can't do it without Theo's help. Now, I don't want to give out too much of the plot, but when a private security corporation gets involved, all hell breaks loose, setting off a dramatic chain of events that involves industrial espionage, alternate reality states, cross-continental road trip, captivity, use of high-tech devices and algorithms, and some far-fetched ideas that go terribly wrong, and some others that hold a great promise of salvation.
Yeah, I didn't manage to get through all of it just yet. Thankfully, your publisher sent me a copy to read. I got through like till day two, I think. And yeah,
the real action just starts.
Really good.
The real action just starts right there.
I was really thinking like, geez, like maybe you should have started with this, like started in media res, because it's really, the second chapter is really hooking. And
yeah, it moves.
I was wondering, like, is it different? Is it different? Because like when you're writing a book, you've already purchased it, right? So, and you're like, you're ready to sit and read for a long time. So yeah. Do you have more leeway, like when you do introductions like that? Because it was very technical, that first chapter. But if I was like I would think for like a movie, like starting with the second part might have been more interesting.
Yeah, for a movie, but it's a bit different when you're writing a book. I think it's characteristic for this genre. You have to do a fair amount of world building, which is probably more challenging when it's set in the near future than, let's say, 200 years from now. Then you can easily get away with flying cars or cyborgs or whatnot. But when you're building the near future, you have to keep it close to today's reality to be believable. And you have to orient your readers. Give them the lay of the land. I had to take the reader inside this world I was creating. That first Sundance technology part, I pulled it all the way up front to let the readers know right away what this book is all about. Initially, it was further in on page 120 or something. And by the time you get there, you actually want to have an idea what this is all about, this world you're entering. So I thought I'd maybe do it right off the bat. First thing, bam, you're in, you know?
Yeah.
This is what you're going to be reading about. It's not going to be about puppies and baseball. You know, it's going to be about this type of thing.
For sure.
Right? So you're in and you're ready to accept this new reality.
Yeah, for sure, definitely. What inspired you to write like this kind of story for this subject matter over other types of genres?
Well, I think in the beginning it was a way for me to collect my own thoughts about these zeitgeist anxieties, climate change, political divisions, economic inequality. And then it kind of became a search for answers. What can we do about it? What can I do about it? So I sat down and wrote a book because that's my part. So that's what prompted me to write this book. I felt a certain sense of duty. I don't know if you can really call it an inspiration.
What are the major like take-home messages you want your readers to take from ALT?
The message I wanted to convey with ALT is that there's an invisible, slow-motion catastrophe that is brewing under the surface, and that we need to shake off our complacency and acknowledge the fact that the only way to stop this oncoming disaster is for us to move away from fossil fuels and find new, cleaner ways to generate energy. This is not going to be easy by any means. We have to mobilize all scientific and technological resources across the world, beyond nations, and approach this as a sort of a world's Manhattan Project, because we're all in it together. And no one will be better off if this gets beyond repair. We need critical mass to generate enough political will to move our governments to action. Because a project of this magnitude will be possible only if the world's governments take lead. Private sector is limited by its pursuit of profit. They're not in business of saving the world. They will certainly have to make their contribution, but the governments will have to lead the way with massive research and infrastructure investments. I think the global momentum towards sustainable energy is gathering, but we need to accelerate it by the factor of 1,000 if we are to have a fighting chance. We're not starting from zero. We made solid advances in alternative energy field with PV solar panels, wind turbines, geothermal, and of course nuclear technologies, but what we accomplished so far is not even close to enough. To me, and I follow this idea in ALT, solar is the most obvious way to go. Solar energy is abundant, it's readily accessible, and completely carbon-free. We get more energy from the sun every second of every day than we would ever need for any task imaginable. Our only challenge, and it is a big one, is to find a way to harness it effectively.
For sure. You mentioned earlier that you came to New York and you entered like the film industry as a film editor. What made you decide then to tell the story in a written form versus in film form?
Well, as I said, ALT grew out of my research for the Peak Oil documentary I was originally planning to do. But as I dove deeper in, I started thinking that this story could be more effective if told through a dramatic vehicle in form of a movie set in the near future where all these looming problems of today have become a reality. So I decided to write a feature film script instead. Then, halfway in the process of writing the script, I realized there's no way to effectively say everything I needed to say in that format. Film has its advantages as a medium, but also its shortcomings. It's visceral, so it's a very good medium to convey emotions and action, but it could be cursory and somewhat superficial. I felt what I needed to say had to go into more detail to really explain the roots of these big problems we're facing, not only the consequences. An interesting thing about this whole transformation from a script to a novel is that the movie scripts are written in present tense because they are happening right now. The action develops in real time in front of our eyes. So when I started adapting the parts of the script I've already written to a novel format, I kept the present tense narration and ran with it, which gave the text a sense of immediacy and urgency you would find in a movie. I think that, combined with probably my overall cinematic sensibility, makes ALT sort of feel like a movie at times, at least the action parts. ALT is not a small book, but it reads very fast because that present tense narration drives the reader forward. There are parts of the book where I go into kind of essayistic discussions about cultural progress versus economic progress, perils of consumerism, futuristic technologies, geopolitical and societal trends that don't translate very well into film language. But the action parts and the structure of the book feel very film-like. I think if one were to strip these essayistic parts, ALT, as it is right now, could make a good maybe 5 or 6 episode limited series. That's the legacy of that first script draft.
That's really cool. So you've dipped now into two different major forms of narrative, I suppose. And what are some of the challenges that kind of differ between the two, between like editing for film and editing for reading when it comes to talking about the environment?
I think every format has its advantages and its disadvantages. When you're doing a documentary, you can afford to be didactic and detailed. It's expected of you. That's why people watch documentaries, after all, to learn more about the subject, to explore it in greater detail. But trying to confront these complex and serious issues head-on could also feel overwhelming if you're dealing only with hard choices and unpleasant facts. How many times can you watch an inconvenient truth without getting seriously bummed out about our future prospects as species? It's important that we know these terrible facts, so we know what we're facing. But people also need reprieve and hope. And that's what I try to offer in ALT, a potential way out in the form of a revolutionary technology. I think that we need to tackle these issues of climate change and alternative energy in every possible way, because each format can contribute something different. And it needs to go beyond books and movies and TV series. We need to mobilize the entire intelligent enterprise of humanity. We need to come up with scientific studies, technological innovations, business white papers, product design improvements, comprehensive ways to shift our way of living towards sustainability. We need to set up community meetings, art installations, write musical symphonies, have church prayer groups, whatever each of us can do individually to raise awareness about coming energy insecurity and climate change challenges, so we can collectively process the immensity of our problems and then move on towards solving them.
For sure, definitely. Speaking about people creating more of this subject matter, what tips do you have for other people trying to do the type of stuff that you've done?
Well, I don't know if I have any tips, but if you have an idea, just get to it. Start working. Time's running out and we are way behind. We all need to contribute what we can. So if you're a storyteller, I don't think there's a more important story out there that needs our attention than this one.
For sure, definitely. I agree. Well, thank you so much, Alex, for coming on. It's been a fun chat. I am enjoying your book, so I'll give it a recommendation right here. And so tell people how they can find it and your work on the internet.
ALT is available right now in the US everywhere books are sold. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, local bookstores. There's also a Kindle version, an ebook that could be downloaded from these retailers. I would encourage your listeners to go to the book's website, which is alt-novel.com. There you can find out more about the book, read the reviews, and find the links where it could be purchased and so on. That's alt-novel.com.
Check it out, guys. Is there no prospect for audiobook?
For readers who don't like reading, right? Well, maybe. It's a good idea. I'll see if I can get hold of Morgan Freeman.
Maybe someone listening can help you with that.
Sure. Why not?
All right. Thanks so much, Alex. Cheers.
All right. Thanks for having me.